The committee will come to order for Tuesday, May 3rd, 2011. Yes, we are at the Committee on Commerce and Consumer Protection. Members and those joining us today, there's a lot of other committee hearings going on, as you know, and conference committees, so there'll be a lot of members coming and going. We don't have quite a quorum yet, but rather than wait for that, I think we're almost there. We want to begin with our agenda so we don't run out of time. And the first bill on the agenda is Senate File 302, Senator Vandeveer. Senator Vandeveer, I know this bill, you've been working on this for quite some time. You were looking for some legislation you could sink your teeth into. I know that you really, really wanted to take a bite out of this one. I found it to be quite a fulfilling experience, I'm sure.
Holy cow.
We're ready to hear all of the marvelous work you've done.
Mr. Chair, we've worked very hard to extract agreement here.
And Senator Vandeveer, we do have a quorum now, so we can go ahead and take care of business.
Glad I showed up just for Senator Vandeveer.
Yes. So, Senator Vandeveer, your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, I move Senate File 302 be recommended to pass and referred to general orders.
Yes, Senator, it would go to general orders.
Okay. And, Mr. Chair, I do have the A1 amendment.
The A1 amendment is being handed out. Make sure all members have that.
And this just gets the bill in the shape I'd like it in. This is the first committee.
Just give us a moment.
It reflects less controversy, I think.
Senator Vandeveer, so this is a delete everything, so we'll just be working off of that A1 amendment then, once it's adopted. So if members have the A1 amendment, this is an author's amendment. Senator Vandeveer moves the A1 amendment be adopted. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say no. And the motion prevails. The A1 amendment is adopted. Senator Vandeveer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This bill reflects a desire to solve some contract conflicts between dentists and insurers, strives to maintain a level playing field. Here to explain the issues is Mr. Sposito.
Mr. Sposito, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Dominic Sposito. I'm a contract lobbyist. I represent the Minnesota Dental Association. And as Senator Vandeveer said, this bill reflects an issue related to dental providers and dental plan contracts. And it's something that the Dental Association has been working on for a couple of years. And first of all, I'd like to thank the chairman and Senator Vandeveer for getting all the parties together and beginning a dialogue and negotiations that have reached pretty much 95% agreement on the proposal that you have before you now in the Delete Everything Amendment. The bill as originally introduced would have required a contract to be renewed between a dental provider and a dental plan organization every 3 years. Most dental plan contracts, including those of the more dominant player in the market, Delta Dental, are what are called evergreen contracts. That means basically they're never renewed. For some dentists, you could sign a contract when you get out of dental school, and that contract would be ongoing, and you would probably never have a chance to negotiate that again. Periodically, Delta would amend what they call their policy and procedures manual to affect changes in their program with their participating member dentists. And the dentists have an opportunity to accept these changes, or they can basically terminate their contract or drop out of the provider network. There really are no negotiations. One of the reasons that this proposal was in the bill is to make sure that the provisions of this legislation would apply then to existing contracts. So by forcing the plan to renewal their contracts, then these statutory changes then would be a part of the next contract upon that renewal. Now, we realize that that was a very controversial position and very, very costly, and because of the agreements that we had and the assertion from Delta Dental that they are willing to amend their policies and procedures to reflect the changes that we come up with in this legislation, then we have taken out that three-year renewal provision, which was objected to by several parties. And I think we'll eliminate the cost concerns that many had about the bill. The major pieces of the legislation relate to two issues, post-treatment audits and the coverage for non-covered services. And Section 3 of the bill, the new language, relates to changes related to the auditing procedure. The goal of the section, frankly, is to give dentists that are audited by Delta Dental opportunities to negotiate with the dental plan and to afford them a better due process than they have today. For many years, Delta had employed something we called prior authorization, where a patient would come into the dental office and present a toothache. The dentist would look at it and say, well, it looks like you need a crown. They would take an x-ray, develop a treatment plan, and then they would submit that to the dental plan. The dental plan would review it, review the information, either approve or deny the claim, and determine what was covered and tell the patient their responsibility and what the plan would cover. And they were doing that for most procedures. But several years ago, Delta instituted decided that it was no longer necessary to do the prior authorizations. They were approving over 90%, 95, 98, 99% of the requests from the dentist, and this was just costly. And everyone was pleased when they decided to end that. It saved money for the dental plans. It also saved money for the dentists and eliminated the ability of having to take x-rays and things like that and then transfer that to a third-party payer. And everyone was pleased. About 6 years, 7 years ago, I'm not sure the exact timing, Delta instituted what was called a post-treatment audit program. And that is the audit the program that the Dental Association feels has some unfairness in it, and that's what we're trying to correct in this legislation. I want to be clear that we're only talking about dental plans and dentists. We're not talking about medical plans or medical providers. We don't think this sets any sort of precedent for health partners or for Medica and their contracts with their physicians and clinics. And by the way, those contracts are generally different than the ones with dentists because those are actually negotiated and renewed on a periodic basis. So that's the major difference. We want to be clear that we're just talking about dental plans. I also want to be very clear that the Dental Association is not seeking the elimination of these audits. If fraud is suspected, by all means, the plans have the right and the responsibility to audit the dentist to assure that everything is on the up and up. All we're seeking is some changes in the process, not elimination of the process, but changes in the process that we think give the dentist a little better standing in this whole debate. Some of the protections would include extending time periods to respond to the audits. Where there would be limits on the time period that the plan could go back to review patient records. We would require a dentist to perform audit reviews, provide a written explanation of the reasons for the audit, an explanation of the audit process, and perhaps how a dentist can appeal or seek mediation or arbitration through their process. And this is all available. It's just we want it perhaps spelled out earlier in the process than it is today. And lastly, we want a definition and some clarification on when we go to an audit, who must pay legal fees and administrative expenses. This has been an ongoing concern for the Dental Association for a couple of years. Legislation was introduced last year, hoping to create an atmosphere to address these concerns. We did have a couple discussions with dental plans, but the situation didn't improve, and therefore the bill was reintroduced this year. And I'd like to thank Senator Vanderveer for taking the mantle on this to bring it back again and to force us basically to work on this again. So as I said, we have on this audit provision, we have reached, I think, a 95% agreement. There are still two outstanding issues that we are in negotiations with Delta Dental on, and I'm hopeful we can reach a resolution very quickly. They are the time period in which the dental plan can withhold funds from the dentist. Now, in this case, being the dominant dental insurer in anyone's individual dental practice, the ability to withhold funding based on an audit can create a tremendous amount of agony for a small business person. And we're talking about thousands of dollars in these audits. And it would be highly probable that Delta could withhold funding that would jeopardize the ability and the cash flow of that individual dentist. And so that's a concern that we were worried about. And it's something that Delta seems reasonable in our discussions to set up an appropriate time period. And frankly, if it works out the way we are discussing it, the majority of the dentists will not have to face this this withhold issue. The second issue is a little more complex, and it's something that I'm not really sure I can speak to, but it has to do with the determination of how you look back and review patient records through a mathematical extrapolation or some sort of mathematical formulary. And what we're trying to do is get into the policy and procedures a definition of what is statistically significant. Now, I'm kind of a layman. I'm a just your mild-mannered lobbyist. I don't have a training in math, but the discussions that we have got into, something with p-values and null factors and things that I don't quite understand, and we're trying to put it in layman's terms, but we're dealing with some very smart people that don't speak English, basically. So we're trying to get it into a term that's understandable. It doesn't do us any good to put something in these policies and procedures that no one understands. So that's part of the hang-up in getting this done. But I think we've made tremendous strides to do this. And let me say this, that the Dental Association is committed to working on this. However, we are a professional trade association. We are not governed by a CEO. We have a board of directors who are volunteer dentists who meet periodically to direct our association. And this agreement has to be approved by our board of directors. And it's not something that's going to happen in a day or two. It's something we need to provide them with, set up a meeting or conference call, and make sure that we understand where we're going. We're in the process of doing that. Unfortunately, we weren't able to do that. This agreement was reached last Thursday night and passed through the House Committee on Friday and is before you today, and we're still working on it. It's a work in progress, but we think we're pretty much there. So I appreciate your assistance on that. The last issue that I want to mention relates to section, I believe it's, for the bill now. Yes, it's called Payment for Non-Covered Services. This section is not aimed at any particular dental provider. It's aimed at the industry. It's a national issue about contracts that restrict or cap dental services that are not covered by the dental plan itself. This has been advocated by the American Dental Association across the country, and I'm proud to report that 20 states have already passed this type of legislation. It addresses some of the concerns that we have with not only large carriers, but also the possibility of our dominant player, Delta Dental, engaging in this practice. And it basically then, if this passed, it would prohibit dental plans from placing in their contracts provisions that restrict a dentist from performing services that are not covered under the plan or requiring the dentist to cap their fees that are, on these services. Now, let's be perfectly clear. Non-covered services include things that aren't generally covered under a dental plan, things like teeth whitening, caps, some orthodontic procedures, and almost all of the things that are determined to be cosmetic. These services are not covered for, they're not paid for by the plan, they're generally an issue between the dentist and the patient. It is those services that we believe should not be limited by a contract where the plan has no dollar involved in it or no say in the process itself. I want to be clear, this restriction does not apply to procedures that are covered under the plan, whether or not they're affected by deductibles or time limits or annual maximums. I want to be very clear about that because that was a subject of contention previously in the bill. So we think this is a fairness issue. This legislation that we have in the bill now is based on an NCOIL model that was agreed to, I believe, last fall. That's the National Council, or is it the National Council of Insurance Legislators? And they work together with the American Dental Association and legislators from around the country to come up with this proposal, and we'll hopefully it will be passed in a majority of the states in the near future. So, Mr. Chairman, I want to be clear that working on that part of the language in the amendment has, I believe, taken care of 95% of the concerns of the Insurance Financial Services Council, as well as the Insurance Federation and some of the large domestic carriers. We still have a small ongoing issue with them that I think will alleviate fairly soon. But again, it's a work in progress. We're not totally there, but we have made tremendous strides since last week. And I'd like to thank the chairman and Senator Vanderveer for getting the ball rolling on these negotiations. Again, this is something that's been around for 2 years, and we're very hopeful we can put this issue to rest. So, Mr. Chairman, I'd be happy to respond to any questions.
Thank you. And let me just say a couple of things to committee members so you know where we're at on this. Normally, if this was a bill that was not 100% ready to go, we would be disinclined to move it to the floor. But a couple of considerations that I would ask the committee's indulgence on in passing this, even though it's, as Mr. Spizzetto says, that it's 95% of the way there. And that is certainly the lateness of the session, where we're at, and the degree in which the parties have come from being very far apart to, and I've heard the 95% number from a couple of different sources, which is even better than the 90% usually we hear, but 95, which means very close. But what I would say to members is that the expectation is that there's an agreement reached and that there's not a lot of dust kicked up by the time should this get to the floor, that those final arrangements or agreements are made to the satisfaction of individuals. And if they're not, we don't want that fight laid open on the Senate floor with folks, because then we would have not done our job by providing a recommendation on those pieces, the remaining 5%. So, Senator Vandeveer, I think that, again, I'm going to ask the committee members to consider that although this is not 100% agreement, that our expectation is that before this would come up on the floor, that we would reasonably be there at that time. Does that reflect also, Senator Vandeveer, your understanding and attitude towards the completion of this bill?
It does, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Questions for Mr. Spizzetto? Okay, then let's move on to some other testimony. I have on the agenda, I have Mr. Lally, if you'd like to come forward. Welcome to the committee.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Joe Lally. I'm a vice president at Delta Dental, and joining me at the testifiers' table is David Morse. Mr. Morse is the president of Delta Dental. I'm going to make a couple introductory comments and then turn it over to him for a discussion of some of the substantive issues in the current version of the bill. I want to start by thanking the chairman and Mr. Cocking in particular for being available to us to have discussions, and to thank Senator Vandeveer for pulling the group together to talk on April 14th. I think those started some discussions, which were then picked up again last Thursday before the House hearing, and I think we've come a long way in resolving some of these issues without legislation. The original bill did three things. It dealt with contracts and attempted to change existing contracts. Not only did that create costs and some other problems, it also ran up against a constitutional provision in both the federal and state constitution about impairment of existing contracts. And so that portion of the bill is falling away, and we're making some, I've agreed to make some changes to the audit portion of the bill rather than in a bill in our private provider contracts. The non-covered services issue, the last section of the bill, isn't a practice that Delta Dental currently engages in, and we're in agreement to with the amended language. I want to provide just a little context, though, for these audits. Delta Dental represents or administers claims for 1.89 million Minnesotans, for many employers that are in your district and many of your constituents. And for you, we represent administer claims for the state employee pool or one administrator. We also represent the public programs administration. In terms of dentists audited, in 2009 there were 23 dentists in Minnesota audited, and in 2010, 20 dentists. That's out of about 2,900 dentists who participate in our network. So less than 1% per year of those dentists in our network are subject to an audit. In the last 7 years, our audits have returned more than $5 million to employers and to the state of Minnesota in terms of both commercial and public programs. That's the numerator in a number that the denominator is $4.05 billion. We paid dentists during that same time period in Minnesota $4.05 billion. So the audits reflect, and the audit recoveries reflect, 0.12%. This is not a problem that we think required legislation. It's not a pervasive problem, but it's an important problem that we have to deal with both contractually and statutorily when it comes to public programs and administering programs for self-insured groups. The money that we collect is returned to the state on public programs and to and the commercial dollars are returned to self-insured groups. I should mention of that, go back for a minute, that $5 million number that's been collected over the last 7 years, 3.7 of that $5 million was in one case that was settled in the middle of March. It's the largest fraud and abuse case in dental administration in the state's history. The money is already flowing back to the state. Just 3 weeks ago, we sent $2.7 million back to our health plans, who then have arrangements, contractual arrangements with the state. And another portion will be returned in June after a certain time period expires. Because we have the relationships with employers, and self-insured employers, and we administer claims on their behalf, and because we return the money to those employers, both the Chamber of Commerce and the Minnesota Business Partnership have submitted a letter, which is in your packet, which opposes the original version of the bill. I think it's because we have those relationships, and it's because we return those dollars that the chamber and the business partnership representing their members are opposed to the bill. I want to turn it over to Dave Morse, the president of Delta Dental, to talk about the status of our efforts to privately resolve these issues, and to talk a little bit about other issues related to the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, welcome. Committee members. Dave Morse, president of Delta Dental of Minnesota. I just very briefly want to touch on a couple things. First of all, Delta is not governed by a CEO. We are a nonprofit. We have no shareholders. We don't pay dividends. We are a member organization. We have two classifications of members, dentists who choose to participate with Delta, and our public members, which are the contract holders. Those members elect a board of directors. A board of directors hires me. With great fanfare in the news, it was announced that public programs were going to be limited to 1% net profit. To put things in perspective, Delta does 0.2 to 0.3% of revenues as an operating gain, which goes into surplus. This bill was first introduced in January. We contacted the MDA Board of Trustees, suggested we sit down and have a meeting. That never occurred. The first indication of any meeting was when Senator Vanderveer called us together on April 14th. Got the message from Senator Gerlach and also the House author, Representative Davids, that we should talk and work this out. We spent 4 hours on it last Thursday, 4.5 hours. We made offers that accommodate every issue that the Dental Association has. We sent them the formula that our statistical expert uses. It's generally accepted in statistics. We, over the weekend, wrote up, sent to them the changes, and I know you can't see it, but everything that's in red here are changes we're making to the contract that we have with dentists that respond to the issues and concerns they have put forth. And I think we're basically there. We've been waiting, again, for a response. I understand they have a board that they have to get approval from in order to get back to us, so we're waiting for that. We do have a committee meeting and a board meeting on the 12th and 13th of May that if this is finalized, it can all be approved and put into place at that point. If it doesn't happen, it'll kick over and be delayed till September. So the last thing I want to say about Delta is Delta employs with its contract service partner about 600 people in Minnesota. The bulk of them are in Eagan. There are 120 to 150 on the Iron Range and Gilbert and our customer service answer center. These are good jobs. They're high-tech jobs. They're well-paying jobs. We have not laid off a single employee during the recession. We have grown our business during the recession through a couple of very fortunate sales we were able to make with the addition of Wachovia into the Wells Fargo family. And also Northwest Airlines, we were able to retain them and acquire the rest of the Delta business. That has brought jobs into Minnesota. That keeps things stable. We try to be, because under the statute we are charged with responsibility as a nonprofit, of being a good steward of other people's money. We try to do that, whether it's self-insured contractors who ask us to administer dental benefits for their companies, or risk-based, which are your smaller groups, the mom-and-pop businesses, some governmental entities. We do what we're supposed to do. We wouldn't be here if it weren't for the fact that we have to deal with people, A, who either game the system, or B, engage in fraud and abuse. I'd much rather be doing something else than being here. But it's a fact of life. Whether you're a lawyer, an auto mechanic, or whoever, there are good and there are bad. And it's a 95, 98 of the version of the old 80-20 rule. All of the problems are caused by a small number. All of the issues and the focus results on that kind of solution. The non-covered services, as Joe said, we've never implemented that. Personally, I don't like it because I think it's fundamentally unfair to providers. So that's where we are. We hope to move forward, but the ball is in their court to respond and get back to us. And as I understand from the chair and the senator, this thing won't move unless we get some kind of agreement on it, which hopefully will get done in the next week or 10 days. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions anybody has, other than if you got a claim problem, don't ask me now, just send it to me.
Senator Dames.
Mr. Chair and Mr. Morris,
yes.
Thank you for your information, and certainly appreciate the employment that you provide in the state of Minnesota. The bill, as the Delete All Amendment brings it forth, is that going to have any effect on your employment in Minnesota?
I think not. The original bill, and the reason I wanted to talk to the MDA about it, is I felt that the changes they wanted to make would have such a dramatic impact on costs that we would have no ability other than to recover those costs by somehow altering or reducing reimbursement to the dentist, perhaps even creating a second network. Because in this market, the margins are so tight and they're so skinny, you cannot go to employers, particularly when you have big groups like we cover, and ask them for more money. It just isn't there. And the small groups are under pressure on their costs because of health care reform. They are the ones probably that will be impacted the most long term. So we're trying to accommodate and keep those people in play, because if you go and read the statute, our enabling purpose under Chapter 62 C01 is to provide widespread, timely, and economical availability of dental services for the people of Minnesota. We think we do that. We think we do it well, and we think we do it very efficiently. I hope that answered your question.
Further questions? Okay. Mr. Morse, thank you very much.
Thank you,
Senator. Thanks for your spending the time and working on this issue.
Thank you. Thank you, Senator. Good luck. Thanks for your efforts.
Ms. Nelson from Blue Cross Blue Shield. Welcome.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Lynn Nelson from Blue Cross Blue Shield of Minnesota, and today I'm representing Minnesota Council of Health Plans and Minnesota's 7 nonprofit health plans in Minnesota. We appreciate the work of Senator Vandeveer and Mr. Sposetto on this bill, and the author's amendment certainly addresses many of the concerns we originally had on the bill. We were originally concerned of the precedent this may set on our medical provider contracting, and appreciate the comments by Mr. Sposetto that the intent is not to impact medical providers. So from here on, I think what we will continue to work with Senator Vandeveer and Mr. Sposetto and Delta Dental to make sure there's not an unintentional impact on medical provider contracts or an unintentional impact on consumer costs. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Other individuals from the audience would like to speak to the bill. Welcome, Ms. Mullen and Ms. Bodine.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Beth McMullen, and I represent the Minnesota Business Partnership. In your packet, there is a letter from the Business Partnership and the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. And I just want to clarify that with the work, as you've heard, that's been done on the bill and the delete all, we believe significant progress has been made towards addressing our concerns. And we understand there's just the couple issues that you've just heard about that they're still working on. So we appreciate the work that the author and the parties have taken in bringing this. Just one final thing that I want the committee to think about is the impact that this has on the consumer, because they are the end recipient of these services, and they are the ones who are paying for it ultimately. So thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members, Lisa Bodine with the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce for the record, and I do echo Ms. McMullen's testimony.
Thank you. Any questions? Okay. Other members of the audience that would like to speak either in favor of or in opposition to the bill? A lot then. Okay, then let me just restate for the members who came in a little late what the plan is here. As you know, this I think they came in late, Senator Bonhoff and Senator Gazalka, and maybe Senator Cruz, maybe you were here. This is the bill that went from, you know, this very, very far apart to what we're hearing is 95% done. Now, normally, if we had more time in the session, I would say, well, then go back and finish that 5%. But the lateness of the session here, I don't want to miss the opportunity since we are very, very close to an agreement on this issue. It's been around for several years, as you know, and we've wrestled with this. And so I'm confident in my judgment in letting this go forward, even though it's not 100% completed, and confident that Senator Vanderveer can bring this to conclusion before it comes up on the floor for us. So that's why I'm just asking the committee's indulgence to bear that into consideration as you vote upon the bill. So separate from whether issues you may have, just from a process perspective, I want to make that clear. Okay. So any final questions? Senator Vanderveer, did you want to wrap up with anything?
Mr. Chair, I think we've covered it. Appreciate the committee's questions and comments.
Okay. All right, then Senator Vanderveer renews his motion that Senate File 302, as amended, be recommended to pass and sent to general orders. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed, say no. And the motion prevails, and Senate File 302 is as amended, is recommended to pass and sent to general orders.
Thank you,
Senator Vanderveer. Senator Gazalka. Going up there, Senator Rest, you missed my speech on two occasions about the process on this particular bill, which is really for your benefit. And you were out of the room on both occasions, so you'll have to wait till after the committee hearing, and I'll review that with you. Because you've come and gone twice, I think, now.
I think if I say anything, I'll get in trouble.
It had to do with the process of handling the Vanderveer bill, what we were doing with that. So. Senator Gazalka.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, this is the Group Insurance Portability Act, GIPA. And before we proceed, I'm just wondering if I can offer the A3 amendment, the author's amendment, to get the bill in the shape I want it to be in.
Okay, the A3 amendment is being handed out. Well, that's being handed out, Senator Gazelk. I know you're a fan of Ronald Reagan, so would you say this is one for the GIPA?
Mr. Chair, you probably wrote down, you, Mr. Chair, you saw my comments because that was my closing request.
Oh,
let's do one for the GIPA.
Okay. Okay, does everybody have the A3 amendment? Oh, it's still going around the table.
Thanks, Jerry.
I'm sorry.
Stealing my thunder.
See, that's why you're the vice chair.
Mr. Chair, while it's being handed out, the amendment basically shrinks the bill dramatically, not the same as the prior bill, but in the similar fashion.
Okay.
What's left?
I'll give you that. Well, then Senator Gazelka moves adoption of the author's amendment, the A3. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed say no. The motion prevails, and the A3 amendment is adopted. And Senator Gazelka, I know this is a page in line, so maybe you could just cut to the chase and tell us what's left in your bill so we could focus on those parts.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Line 3.12 is the beginning of what's left. We deleted sections 1 and 2 and some small parts of the other parts of this. What's remaining, I will tell you, was passed by this committee last year by a bill authored by Linda Scheid. So what this bill is, this is really designed as there's a problem. Minnesotans that are in between jobs go without health insurance because of unaffordable COBRA. COBRA continuation premiums that are cost prohibitive to a newly unemployed person. This results in about 90% of individuals between jobs going without health insurance. The remaining 10% find a way to pay the high cost of COBRA premiums because they have ongoing medical conditions typically and know that the cost of care will likely exceed the COBRA coverage. So GIPA provides affordable health insurance to fill the gap upon loss of group coverage. A GAP plan would be available immediately after becoming unemployed. GIPA provides individuals leaving employment a choice from among at least three insurance plans, one of which is a qualified HSA plan, a non-HSA high-deductible plan, and a lower-deductible plan in addition to COBRA that they can still have. GAP plans are paid directly by the insured person to the insurance company, reducing the administrative costs of COBRA. So, Mr. Chair and members, that's it in a nutshell. I have Tim Wilkin here and
Greg Ditello.
Greg Ditello to give you more detail.
Thank you. Mr. Wilkin, did you want to go first or whichever?
I'll go.
Please identify yourself for the record.
Yeah. Thank you. My name is Greg Ditello. I've been insuring the uninsured in the state of Minnesota for over 35 years. My firm is also one of the Minnesota's oldest COBRA administrators in the state since 1989. I'm also representing the Agents Coalition for Healthcare Reform that makes up all the insurance agent associations in Minnesota, and there's over 58,000 licensed health insurance alone in Minnesota. And we also service 2.4 million Minnesotans and over 80% of all the employers in the state. My colleagues and I have to deal with a broken healthcare system day in and day out. Today, I will show you one broken part of the healthcare system that your constituents and also you have. But you and only you can fix it, and the insurance companies would like to fix it, but they can't collaborate because of antitrust laws. They all can't get in the same room and figure this out because they'll get accused of violating antitrust laws. So, you know, here it's basically up to you to help us to solve a problem that all of us in Minnesota basically has when you're in between employment. Now, the benefit of Senate File 1158 uses the private market to fix its own problem without any tax subsidies from the government. In fact, it'll fix Senate File 1158 will actually fix a problem that will prevent more people from jumping onto government subsidized plans, because when you have no insurance and then you are unlucky and you catch an illness or an accident and you spend down all your assets, then you have to fall back onto the state. So this is a private market solution that I'm asking your help in getting this passed. Now, everyone hopefully might have a little PowerPoint. There's only 12 slides on this, and I'm more than happy to go through this kind of quickly. The first two I've already gone through. I'm on the first page, the last diagram there. It's got unaffordable health insurance in between jobs. As the senator said, 9 out of 10 people go without health insurance when they're in between jobs, because only 1 out of 10 actually elects COBRA. The reason, if you turn the page, you'll actually see that I'm going to use the Minnesota State employee, which is most likely if you're covered through your health insurance through the state. You also have a a sheet here of continuation. This is your COBRA rate if you were to become unemployed at the next election. $16,100 is your annual cost if you have, if you're insured and if you just have one child or two kids or a spouse, doesn't matter, your annual cost is $16,100 to continue your health insurance. Now, you're self-funded, but you can pass a law to also include yourself on the gap plan. But right now, you're self-insured. This only applies to fully insured. So what you have here is a problem that is unaffordable, not only for you, but also for your constituents. This is very common out in the private sector. Now, the next today's new solution says the gap coverage is guaranteed, it's affordable, and it's portable. Gap. We're filling the gap between plans. We're not going to take anything away from COBRA. We're just going to offer a new option. The terminated individual will be offered the COBRA and the gap plan. Individuals are free to choose whichever they want. Now, the gap plan offers individual insurance plan designs that fit into individual budget. We're projecting between 50 to 70% less than your COBRA rate because the plans are not as rich as your COBRA. Now, people in between jobs, they are more than happy to have a policy that they believe they'll never collect on, but they'll buy it. Because your state plan, you're thinking you're going to collect on that during the year by going to see the doctor. The plans we have here are affordable options, but if you do happen to get sick, you're not going to lose all your assets and you're not going to fall back onto the state to have them help you on out. So the there's three different plans. It's a guarantee issue with no pre-existing, just like your COBRA, because COBRA, you can't put a new pre-existing on that, so we don't want that to happen here either. And it's simplified enrollment. That's very crucial because people in between jobs, they don't want to fill out a four-page individual app that usually takes 3 to 6 weeks to see if you're going to be approved. They say, hey, DiTillo, we're not going to go do individual because it's too complicated and I'm only going to be unemployed for a week or two or a month or whatever, okay? Well, the gap plan is you sign your name and it's with the same carrier. So now here, the coverage remains in force up to the time that they get insured somewhere else and they drop their gap plan or 18 months. So it's the same time limit as COBRA. We're mirroring the COBRA for a terminated employee on that. Then at the end of the 18 months, they also then are eligible for a conversion plan. And that's the same thing that you have right now under under COBRA for fully insured. So we're mirroring the COBRA. So if somebody takes a gap plan, we're not going to take anything away than if they were to take the COBRA with the conversion. Okay. Now, today's new solution, the advantages for individual affordability against catastrophic medical losses, because people really buying this are not expecting to use it because why? Because there's higher deductibles. Okay, we even have a deductible of $15,000. That's why it lowers the rate up to about 70%. Now it's affordable. If you take 30% of $16,000, that's $4,800. Most of you be willing to pay $400 a month to insure your family for peace of mind, knowing your max liability is $15,000. Okay. Now, here, advantages for employers. Incentive to remain fully insured, not self-insured. Okay. This is a benefit that employers could actually use for new hires to say, hey, if you leave our place of employment, Pillsbury doesn't do this for you, but our plan does. You also have employers that are seasonal. I just had a group this week here where each year the employees have a new pre-existing condition that they got to go through because they're seasonal. They get laid off in December and they get rehired in April. So you got a four-month gap. COBRA costs too much money. So they go without insurance for 4 months, but now when they get apply for the same group plan, they have a new pre-ex of what we call 6-12, 6 months. I'm getting too detailed. I'll keep moving. Okay. here, your tax advantages for the insurance company. It brings healthy individuals into the risk pool to help stabilize insurance rates. Because who's going to keep the COBRA are the people with high claims. They're not going to buy a $15,000 deductible plan. It reduces the number of uninsured that otherwise would drive up the costs to insured people. So when somebody doesn't have insurance, we know it drives up the cost of the or when people are uninsured, it drives up the cost for the insured. Taxpayer advantage, it reduces the cost of state-subsidized health care programs for unemployed and uninsured. Now, this here, there's some myths here that I'll just kind of briefly just go through. We'll transfer unhealthy risk. The individuals can already buy, I'm on the next page here, an individual plan already did that. The Affordable Care Act does not address this at all, okay, because the government looks back the previous year at your income. So when you become unemployed in a new year, there's no qualification for subsidies. Group insurance portability solution, immediate affordable health insurance between jobs reduces uninsured. In Minnesota, attracts healthy individuals to join insurance pool, and it protects the state health budget.
Thank you, Mr. DiTillo. Any questions? We have a few. Senator Brown and then Bonoff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to clarify something. Did you say the GAP plan will cover pre-existing conditions?
That's correct, yes. The way it'll do it is, with pre-existing, when a new hire comes on, and if they haven't had coverage in the previous 63 days, they have what's called a new pre-X. This is for a small group under 50, where if they've had a condition in the last 6 months, they're not going to cover that for 12 months. But if they were covered under the group plan for 8 months, that 8 months credit rolls over to the GAP plan, where then they only got 4 months. Where if they would have stayed on the group plan or on COBRA, they would have the same 4 months. So it mirrors exactly the same pre-X, and it's HIPAA pre-X. We copied the law on that. So if a person's been covered on their group plan for 12 months or longer, forget what I said. Yes, all pre-X is covered.
Senator Bonoff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Kozalka, I have some concerns about the bill. I do think there are products currently in the marketplace that do address this. I know, for example, a couple times when my kids have been in situations before the law change where they didn't have insurance, one who lost or changed jobs, another finished college, I was able to go onto the private market, called Medica, found out they had a product that would work just perfectly, high deductible, low premium. So I'm not certain that that there really isn't availability right now in the market. So that's one concern. So I don't know why we need a law on that. And then the other thing is it feels a little bit unusual for us to create a law telling the marketplace what product they must offer as a mandate. So, and, you know, we don't know if that's an affordable product for them to offer. I'm just wondering what our role is as legislators in this conversation.
Senator Kozalka?
Mr. Chair, Senator Bonoff, I will take a stab at that, and these gentlemen may want to as well. The problem is about 90% of the people aren't making that transition to get health insurance, and part of it, I think, is, or one of the solutions that this provides is you, as I understand it, you'd still have the opportunity to stay with your same company for insurance, the health insurance company. And I think there's a whole lot of people out there that just don't like change. And if they know they've got some sense of where they were is where they're going, I think that they would buy it. But that's my best stab at it. But I don't know if either one of you want to address
but
that.
But Senator Kozalka, how about with regard to the role as legislators dictating to the marketplace of what they must offer?
Mr. Chair and Senator Bonoff, I think that's a fair question. I guess I want the opportunity for this bill to be heard and discussed and kicked around. I'm slightly more on these guys' side than I am on the other side of this issue. And I think we do have a problem if 90% are going without And if we have the opportunity to try to make that transition and provide another tool that they can use but don't have to, that's why I'm here.
And Senator Brown.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Bonhoff, to address some of what you just said, I was someone in my family who fell into this category when my employment was terminated with a former company. For me to go with COBRA was going to be $1,700 a month. I couldn't afford that. And therefore, I was not eligible for anything else because I did have a group option. For me to have gone with another plan, I have a family member who has a chronic illness, and anything pre-existing would not have been covered under any other plan of which I was aware, and I am a health insurance agent. So so there wasn't anything out there that would have covered the pre-existing, and that was the main reason we wanted something was because of this individual's conditions. So I see this as a plus, I guess, for us.
Okay. Senator Chamberlain.
Just how much, give me an idea, how much for reference point for a gap plan, how much would it cut these COBRA costs? How much could you save roughly? Any idea? I know there's a lot of differences, but just a ballpark.
Mr. DiCello?
This is called a decrement chart, okay?
Oops.
This has the different policies, and if you take a group insurance risk, decrement means between plans, I'm saying that it'll be between 50 and 70%. However, there are individuals that think all the individuals that are currently taking COBRA are going to jump off the COBRA and jump onto these high deductible plans, and then that experience won't reflect that. I believe that that's not true, because who in this room has asked themselves when they bought a new car and then they forgot to call up their insurance agent, the chill that you get when you figure out, oh, my gosh, I'm driving a car that I don't have insurance on. Well, this is what people experience every day without having health insurance. So when you have affordable care, you are going to draw the good risk into the pool. And that's totally being discredited. And I believe the consumer is looking for an affordable option. So that, I believe, is going to reflect much closer to the actual decrements that are already out there than creating a new, they're going to be selected against. I firmly believe that is not going to happen.
Thanks. Okay. Senator Dames.
As I understand, this gap plan will be offered by the current carrier that has the group plan. So then my question is, am I right in saying that companies that write just individual plans will not be required to accept the people with the existing conditions, or are they going to be required to accept those folks also?
Let's take State Farm, who writes an individual policy and they don't do group insurance.
Right.
They will not be required to offer a gap plan with guarantee issue.
Thank you.
Senator Brown.
Yes, Mr. Chair. That makes me think of this question, and what if the insurance company is not based in Minnesota? I had a group plan through Anthem Blue Cross out of California. Would this law require them to offer a gap plan?
All the plans that are offered right now with a conversion plan that are fully insured, the way we wrote it, the answer is yes.
Okay. For the questions, Mr. Wilkin, did you want to speak to the bill?
Mr. Chairman, members, I'm Tim Wilkin, representing the Minnesota Association of Health Underwriters. I'm just here to answer questions, a set of questions that might come up, but I have nothing to add right now.
All right, then. We have some other let me ask this. Is there anybody else that wants to speak in favor of the bill? And Senator Gazelka, you don't have any other testifiers? You don't? Okay. Then Mr. Bartsch from Medica would like to come up and speak. And okay. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Bartsch.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Jeff Barsh. I represent Medica. I'm also here today on behalf of the Minnesota Council of Health Plans. We certainly understand the issue that Senator Gazelka and the proponents are trying to address. I think everyone can agree that COBRA coverage is very expensive coverage. The reason is it's comprehensive coverage. Group policies usually cover more than an individual policy. So there is certainly a sticker shock for people when they become unemployed and all of a sudden see the full cost of their employer group coverage that they're required to pay for through COBRA. Our concern with the bill that's before us is that it's attempting to create a new solution to address that problem that may not actually be a new solution compared to what's currently in the marketplace. It may have some unintended consequences, particularly as it applies to rates for insurance products in the individual market. And then we have some concerns about the applicability of the GAP plan as it may be in conflict with existing state or federal laws relating to individual coverage. Currently, when someone is covered under a group policy and they lose their job, they have really three options that are available to them. The first is to continue their COBRA coverage, and generally people who have a health condition and want that extensive coverage, if they can afford it, they'll stay on COBRA because it'll provide the same benefits they had under the group policy. If someone cannot afford COBRA coverage but have a need for that more extensive coverage, they can automatically qualify for coverage under the Minnesota Comprehensive Health Association. So MCHA actually has as a qualifying event for coverage that you cannot afford your COBRA premium. MCHA, as this group knows, is a more comprehensive coverage. There are options, policies available to the individual, but the premiums are limited to 120% of the individual market. So typically it would be a much less expensive option than if you were just paying your COBRA policy yourself. So that option is available to people in the marketplace. And then the third option would be for those individuals who are healthy and want to choose and shop for products in the individual market. So there are options available. The GAP product is an attempt to try and provide a more affordable, guaranteed individual policy to someone who loses their group coverage. The concern we have with the risk is that you would not be, as Mr. DiTillo mentioned, just attracting the healthy risk from people who lose their group coverage, but also potentially attracting some unhealthy risk. And our concern for that is if you're moving risk and unhealthy risk from the group market to the individual market, you're potentially raising the cost on individual policies. That might be good for the group. That's not so good for the individual market. And the individual market is an extremely price-sensitive market where just small fluctuations in the price of premium can cause someone to either change their coverage election or decide not to be covered altogether. The last issue I want to address is the application of the GAP policy as an individual policy. As it's written, or as it's attempted to be written here, it's a guaranteed 18-month individual policy. And we think that's not necessarily allowed under the Health Insurance and Portability Act of 1996, which says that an individual policy has to be guaranteed renewable. So in this state and in all states, when you buy an individual policy, you can keep that policy forever as long as you continue to pay the premiums. This would sort of end that by creating an 18-month policy in the individual market. There are exceptions to the guarantee renewability law for short-term policies, the 3-, 6-, 9-month policies you can get in the market. But for anything that's talked about as a fully covered individual policy, you can't have a limit on the extent of that coverage. The other issue this raises is individual policies, while renewable, meaning you can keep that policy you buy for as long as you want to buy it, that doesn't mean you can move from one individual policy to another on a guaranteed basis. And the way the GAP plan is currently written, you would move from your GAP individual policy to your conversion individual policy, and that's not necessarily allowed under state or federal law. We've spoken with the proponents to see if there's a way to address this by potentially skipping your COBRA continuation coverage and allowing these as options under your conversion policy. That might be a way to get around those issues. But until we can address that issue, we have some concerns, one, with what this would do in terms of impact on the individual market and the applicability of this as an existing product in the marketplace. With that, I'd be happy to answer some questions.
Any questions? Senator Brown.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. You had mentioned that there are other products already available in the marketplace. Do those products cover pre-existing conditions?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Brown, as I mentioned, for someone who's covered under group policy, there's a guaranteed coverage with no pre-existing condition for either your COBRA coverage or continuation that we call it at a state level. If COBRA is unaffordable, you can get access to guaranteed coverage through the Minnesota Comprehensive Health Association. Again, if your COBRA is unaffordable, that is that's a qualifier for MSHA coverage without any pre-existing condition exclusions.
So, Mr. Chair, you're saying MSHA would cover pre-existing?
Yes.
Thank you.
Further questions? Mr. Yes.
Can I respond to that? Yeah, COBRA will cover pre-existing under only one condition, is affordability. So an individual, okay, who's not broke, doesn't have any assets, yes, I agree. But that's not 90% of the population. They have retirement assets. They got money in the bank. So how can you justifiably say I can't afford it when you got $100,000 sitting in your 401k plan or whatever? So those individuals will have a pre-existing condition. So only the poor are eligible, unless you outright lie and tell MCHA, oh, I can't afford this. I do have five properties. I've got $100,000 sitting in CDs. Is that affordable? So my thing is that, yes, it is pre-exes waived on MCHA only if you can't afford it, and that's a small, small portion of the 90%.
Senator Bonoff.
Mr. Chair, could you be specific about the rule for that? That was my question with regard to affordability. What is there a means test? What is the formula for that?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Bonoff, as I reviewed the MCHA application, you check off that your COBRA coverage is unaffordable. I don't know of the rules that MCHA uses to verify whether or not it is truly affordable to someone or not. I just believe that you check it off on the application and then you attest to that when you sign the application.
Mr. Chair, is there somebody from MSHA who could answer that question if they, in fact, do then look at your assets? Is there anyone here who has that knowledge?
I could answer that because I'm a licensed.
Mr. Dattello, someone can ask that directly, but thank you.
It doesn't look like MSHA is here. I'm Tina Armstrong from the Minnesota Department of Commerce, and MSHA does not have a means or asset test, so they do look at the cost of the COBRA, the Minnesota continuation premium versus the MCHA premium for the plan that you're choosing. So they wouldn't allow you to choose a more costly MCHA premium option. But other than that, there is no means or asset test that they are currently using.
Thank you. Mr. Dattello, did you want to add something to that?
The determination of all this is not a legislative decision. It's up to a board. MCHA board that determines, and this is a rather new thing that they have added. So it's kind of a loosey-goosey thing in regards to commerce, as Tina has said, is there's really nothing there other than saying, well, I can't afford it, and then handing or showing your current, COBRA premium.
Senator Bonoff, did you have any follow-up question? Okay. Then further questions? Okay, then I think Mr. Reich wanted to add something to the discussion. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Gazelka keeps asking whether or not the department's taken a position on who our favorite senator is in the committee yet, and still waiting for feedback on that. So, still no answer for today, Senator Gazelka. I'm sorry about that. Thank you for the opportunity to say a few words, Mr. Chair. We just have a couple of concerns, one of which was addressed with the A3 amendment, so we appreciate that, and we've been working with Senator Gazelka and the MAHU folks, Minnesota Association of Health Underwriters Association, on the bill. The underlying issue that we had is on lines 8.1 through 8.4, and that is with respect to the commission payments. The department does not have a position on who should be paid with commissions and how much. We believe that's a business-to-business decision and not something we should regulate. But our concern lies in whether or not there's a dispute as to whether or not an agent was paid the correct commission, and the department would have to serve as sort of a referee in that, and that's not something we're very comfortable with. We'll say that We have been continuing to talk with the MAHU folks, and we'll continue to do so. But at this point, we're opposed to the bill based on that provision.
Mr. Reich, I just want to clarify that you mentioned the lines you mentioned are in Section 4 of the bill. Isn't that just so I'm
still in Section 3.
Oh, I'm sorry, it's in Section.
It's right up here. Section 4 is gone, but that's still in the bill.
Oh, I see 8.1. All right, I was looking at the wrong section. So that 8.1 and 8.4 is still in the bill, and that's the section that you're having the difficulty with. Is that correct?
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Right. Any questions for Mr. Reich? Okay, thank you. Is there anybody else in the audience that would like to speak to the bill?
Any comment on that section?
Oh, on that,
Chair?
Certainly on that. Yes, Mr. Dottillo, if you wanted to comment on what the Department of Commerce had to say.
As that section reads, it's totally neutral between the group and the gap plan. This way, the agent will not favor either way of telling the individual which way to go. Because I know there's some that believe that, you know, if one pays more, then they'll get more swayed that way. Well, that takes that total argument out of the picture. It's totally neutral in regards to the agent. The other reason it's in there is that conversion plans, which are a super deal for the individual, are eligible for individuals when they run out. However, the insurance companies do not allow the agents. There's one insurance company. We can't even get the conversion rates out. But we're not paid on the conversion rates. And there's reasons why if this isn't in the bill, what will happen is we feel there would be no incentive for an agent to even talk to anybody about this because they're not going to get compensated. So that's another way of killing a great idea by taking that on out. That's why we're pretty much, well, that's why we're working to figure out how we could get this the state not to be a referee on any of this.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Reich, you wanted to respond to that?
Real quickly, Mr. Chair. John Reich, Department of Commerce. We not necessarily opposed to the bill in concept. I mean, this piece here would force us to act as a referee, and that's the part that we have trouble with. You know, in terms of agents getting recourse based on fees they're not being paid or being underpaid, there's a mechanism for that. We just rather it not be us. So.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you. Okay. Is there anybody else in the audience that would like to speak in favor of or in opposition to the bill? Are there any questions from committee members? Is there any discussion among committee members? Who wants to wrap it up and actually finish a couple of minutes early? Okay. Well, then, seeing that, Senator Gazelka, did you want to wrap up with anything?
Mr. Chair,
I stole your line at the beginning, I'm
well,
sorry.
Well, thank you. I do one for the GIPA, but Mr. Chair, sounded better from you. But members, too, I just want to make a comment. I am licensed to sell health insurance. I don't think I've sold a policy in 2 or 3 years. That's not my motive on this, but I want to make sure that that's clear to the committee. As I said, this is kind of in between two sides of an industry. But I think there is a real need to help people that, for whatever reason, they find themselves suddenly out of work, and making sure that they get health insurance, and about 90% of that group presently isn't insured, and this is an opportunity to maybe help some of them.
Okay. Then with that, Senator Gazelka moves that Senate File 1158 as amended be recommended to pass and re-referred to Finance. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, say no.
No.
And the motion prevails, and Senate File 1158, as amended, is recommended to pass and is re-referred to the Committee on Finance.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
Thank you, Senator Gazelka. And with that, committee members, I'll just say that tomorrow we have two additional bills that met first deadline in the other body, and that we'll be taking those up. And then I don't know that there's anything else on the agenda that we're aware of remaining. So please, if you can be here on time to help us make the quorum tomorrow. We had a little difficulty on that this morning getting going, and we'd like to get started right away and take action on those bills. And I know there's a lot of conflicting conference committees and other committee meetings, but if you could just check in, that'll help us take care of the business. So with that, the committee is adjourned.